I'm brought to you this evening through the courtesy of the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Canadian People. Canada is a lot like some of your southern states, in that you cannot vote if you're illiterate, but you can get elected. Now, I know you're going to love the show, but folks, I don't want you to love me just because I'm white. 2 months ago, Sonny Liston was arrested for carrying a concealed weapon and drunken driving. And they subsequently let him go. Now, I just finished paying a $50 fine because my car was smoking. When they let Sonny Liston go, they gave him back his gun. They still got my car. I'm telling you, it's getting tough to be white. It's tough to be white, especially if you're a comic. Now, I believe in equality. I believe my paycheck should equal Dick Gregory's. When I came down here last year, I called an agent. I said, "Hi, my name's John Barber, and I'm from Canada, and I'm looking for representation." He said, "Are you white?" And I said, "Yes." He says, "That's no good." I said, "Well, I'm half Jewish." He said, "That used to be good." So for 6 months in the two areas in Canada where I had training to earn my livelihood, I couldn't get a job. Nightclubs and the post office. And I'm afraid that they're so well organized that when I walk down the street and a guy says, "Shine, mister," I'm afraid if I don't let him shine my shoes, I won't get my mail for a week. So I let him shine my shoes, and I wear sandals. Since there are now a great number of Negro postmen, the efficiency factor has gone up 100%. The dogs are afraid to bite them. They don't want to be called bigots. Now, I was running around trying to get myself a job. And every place I went, I heard people talking about hire Negroes, hire Negroes, hire Negroes. So I had to go every place else, running around. I fell down and I broke my both legs. So I figured now I've got a chance to get a job because now I'm a handicapped. So I went down to the welfare department and I said, "I'm handicapped. Remember all the people that used to say hire the handicapped?" Well, he said, "Well, all the jobs are taken by Negroes." I'm telling you, it's tough to be a white cripple. I couldn't make a living. So I figured, well, the only place left for the white man is real estate. So what I did is I thought I was going to try something new. I was going to make a great deal of money because I know a lot of white liberals who talk about doing things wonderful for the Negro in this country. So what I did is I took what few dollars I had and I went down to Central Avenue and I bought a whole block of houses with a small down payment. And the idea was that I was going to get some of my white liberal friends to move into Central Avenue and raise property values. I went broke. There is one small consolation in a Negro living in a ghetto. I mean, he knows that's as low as his property's going to get. Poor white man, he lives in constant panic. Now, this whole business that's going on in the country has made me terribly, terribly self-conscious. I never used to think as a youngster anything about going into a car wash and having my car washed. Now I drive into the car wash, and all of a sudden I feel guilty because I'm contributing, you know, to their deprivation because they got to work in there and wash my cars. Well, I feel so guilty that while they're washing my cars, I go up back and wash theirs. And Cadillacs are bigger than Chevys. Dr. King is trying to get his vote for his people. Now, you know, he's the doctor who specializes in internal disorders. Dr. King is going to get his vote for his people eventually, and then the next presidential election down here, they'll go into the voting booths, and they'll put their X down. And won't Dr. King be surprised when he sees that's a write-in name for a Muslim? Do you know, it's not really easy for a Negro woman in this country to be a Muslim, because it gets... it gets very awkward, you know. If she divorces him, she's got to go around referring to him as her ex-ex. I went to one of their secret meetings. I went disguised as an albino. And I found out this, you know. The Muslims don't smoke, and they don't drink, and they eat the right foods, because they want to be healthy when they meet you in the alley. The other day, I went down to Los Angeles City Hall to pay a traffic ticket. And when I came out from paying the ticket, there were a couple of Muslims standing there. And as soon as I walked out, they walked in front of me, and they held up this paper, and they said, 20 cents, Muhammad speaks. I said, I heard him. That'll cost you 40 cents. So in preparing for my citizenship, I've been studying American history and Japanese karate. They're making great leaps in the area of civil rights. I mean, they've already got their first Negro astronaut. And that's a great leap from the back of the bus to the moon. USSR is no match for the NAACP. Russians get a man on the moon to explore, they'll find a picket. You know, there's so much demonstrating and parading and picketing in America that they set aside one whole month for it. March. They, sometimes get, I think, just a shade pushy. Now, I contribute to the NAACP, even though a lot of people say I'm rotten to the core. But they came up to me one day, and they said, John, you're going to have to put one of our people in your act. So I said, okay, send over Lena Horne. They're going around the NAACP and CORE, and they're talking about having racial representation in jobs because in the United States, the Negroes comprise 10% of the population. This means they want one out of every nine working people to be a Negro. And that'd be awful if that happened, you know, one out of every nine a Negro. I mean, San Francisco wouldn't have a baseball team. They'd have to fire six players. Wouldn't it be terrible, you know, if this thing gets carried away and all of a sudden in your national pastime you're going to have nationality representation. And one of the nine players, you're going to have a Frenchman, a Greek, an Italian, an Irishman, a Mexican, a Negro, a Pope, a Persian, Puerto Rican, and everybody saying, kill the ump, he's Armenian. In boxing, it wasn't too long ago that down here in this country, they were looking for a white man to fight against Floyd Patterson. You probably remember that. Floyd Patterson, as you recall, fought against Sonny Liston and in the first round staged a sit-in. Do you remember that was the time? That was the time people were going around saying, gee, if the cannibals ate Floyd Patterson, they'd be eating chicken. So what happened is the American promoters set up to Canada for a boy by the name of George Shivallo, and he became Canada's great white hopeless. I don't know if you saw the fight, but I saw the fight, and it was a little bit nerve-wracking because what happened is they had a Negro referee. Now, I didn't pay any attention to this until the fight was over at the end of 10 rounds, and the judge took the Negro referee's card, and he read it, and he said, 4 for Shivallo, 6 for us. All this movement down here, all this parading and demonstrating and picketing in America has also affected the Negroes in Canada. Both of them. they're always walking around and parading and marching and the whole business, but nobody pays too much attention to them because they think they're going together. In this country, the Negro is not the most mistreated minority group. 3 weeks ago on David Susskind's show, they had a show called Crime and Punishment USA. And David Susskind's main guest was a lawyer from San Francisco by the name of Jake Ehrlich. And the four men who were their guests were ex-convicts who had been unjustly convicted of homicide and subsequently released, three white men and a Negro. Now, the three white men told the story, and David didn't react to their telling the story. And the Negro told his story, talked about police brutality, which was no different than the white fellow's story, and David started to cry. And he turned to Jake Ehrlich, you know, and he's got tears in his eyes, and he says, Jake, how is it in America when an American citizen is arrested, he can be so deprived of his constitutional rights? And Jake said, David, look at him. He's a Negro. And you know in America when a Negro's arrested, he hasn't got a Chinaman's chance. Now, this whole business of minority groups and race consciousness has really had effects on other minority groups. Now, my laundryman joined the Yellow Muslims. And is he ever two-faced? I go in there, you know, and he smiles at me, then he gives me a misfortune cookie. I would say if there is any one group of people in this country that is responsible for the way things are going to pot, not meaning marijuana, just... It's the phony white liberal. Now, I have found one thing that all white girls have in common who get involved with civil rights demonstrations. No chest. I mean, they know what it is to be underprivileged. On Wilshire Boulevard, the other day, a Negro boy is driving his car, and he goes through a red light, hits a hydrant, hits a lamppost, hits a bus stop, and runs over a white boy. And there's a white psychiatrist who's just come out of his office. He sees the Negro in the car, then walks over to the white boy and said, it's a shame he had a martyr complex. And the girl I was with ran over to comfort the driver. This last summer, I was fortunate enough to be visiting New York City, and I have a friend who works for the New York City Welfare Department, and I wanted him to take me around on a tour of the city. So what we did is we went into Harlem, and this fellow I've known for a long time. He loves everyone. He has a beautiful quality that he sees everything good in people, and he can see no wrong. He was talking about, you know, how underprivileged the people are in Harlem, how deprived, how destitute, and the whole thing. And we were there, and he was telling me this in the midst of a riot. And what happened is a half a dozen Negro kids picked up a 2x4, and they ran by us, and they started banging on the shopkeeper's door. They started banging on the door, started knocking it down. So I saw this, you know, and I said, gee, I mean, what's redeeming about this? And, you know, he says, they still got rhythm. There is a show on television, comes on every week, and the show is called The Daniel Boone Show. And the teaser to the show, the opening, is the same every week. You see Daniel Boone in the background, and you hear the song, and the first line to the song is, Daniel Boone, Daniel Boone, a big man is he. And then you see Daniel Boone, he shoots a bear. The next line is, Daniel Boone, Daniel Boone is fighting so all Americans can be free. He shoots an Indian. So I was watching the Daniel Boone show this week because I read that they were going to do a show starring a Negro actor for a change, and I wanted to see what they were going to do. Well, the show opened up with a colossal Negro slave running away from his master, going a mile in a minute through the bush with a 25-pound ball and chain around his ankle. Now, we know they can run, you know, but 25 pounds around the ankle. Now, In this particular show, the Negro's owner was not an American, see? Because that's not American anymore, to buy people. In the show, the Negro's owner is a Scotchman. And he's running after the slave, and he's saying, "It's neither color of your skin, but I got an investment in you." So what happens? The Negro is running through the forest, and he trips over a hunk of wood, a piece of John Birch. And just as the Scotchman's about to grab him, Daniel Boone steps in. "Never mind, sir, I'll help you." Now, you know anybody who sounds like Governor Wallace. So anyway, here in the middle of the forest, they begin arguing about civil rights. And what happens is that Daniel Boone says, "Well, man's much more important than property," and the Scotchman says that man is not more important, otherwise God would have built man first, and then the Garden of Eden. Daniel Boone turns to the Negro. "Tell me, sir, what do you think about all this?" And the Negro, who hasn't spoken, speaks his first words as his new image. "Well, to be quite honest with you..." "I haven't given it a whole lot of thought." While they start arguing again about civil rights, they wake up their neighbors, the Indians. And you know how angry an Indian can be when he wakes up in the middle of the night. I mean, it takes a long time to get to sleep on that cold ground. So 1,000 Indians attack these three guys. And the first guy to get shot is a Scotchman. Hit in the wallet, and down he goes. The next guy to get it is Daniel Boone. 1,000 Indians jump over the tree and attack the Negro. And you know what he did? He clubbed him to death with his ball and chain. Custer had an army, and he got scalped to the navel. This was a pilot film for a proposed pre-Civil War story starring a Negro called Super Slave. One thing nice, though, since the Civil Rights Bill, I remember I was up in San Francisco at the Hungry Eye at the time, and I noticed coming into the club a great number of mixed couples. You know, Negro fellows with white fellows. Someday in this country, there's going to be total equality between Negroes, whites, Jews, Catholics, Protestants, all groups, and then we can get back to hating one another as individuals. Thank you very much, folks. Down here from Canada. Canadians? Well, know how proud you feel, folks. I'm not going back either. Yeah, I'm not going to say anything about the Canadian government tonight, because 3 years ago in Canada, the Communist Party actually tried to overthrow our government and gave up when they couldn't find it. Because I can tell you that socialism won't work, because I know a number of socialists in Canada, and they won't work. I've been trying to catch up on all things political down here since I'm on my way to becoming a citizen, and I read Goldwater's life story, and I read Kennedy's life story. Kennedy's was PT-109, and Goldwater's was Putt-Putt-64. Hey, I understand you have a lot of John Birchers in Orange County. Is that right? Oh, I'm not going to say anything about them because I don't do sick jokes. I just... Miss, could I borrow one of your cigarettes, please? I just put mine out. Thanks very much. Newport? Yeah, you ever see that Newport commercial? It shows you a guy hops out of the ocean down to Santa Monica, runs up on the beach, smokes in Newport, and then chases some blonde down the beach. I don't know of any smoker who can run that fast. There's supposed to be some honest advertising on TV this year concerning the Surgeon General's report on cigarettes since it came out. Could you just see them now? Smoke L&M. Make the logical move to Mount Sinai. Nine out of 10 doctors prefer Camel smokers to operate on. Pell mell, over, under, around and through. There isn't a place in your body it won't get to. Dual filter Tarryton, one for each lung. Menthol cigarettes are medicated. Give your lungs a vapo rub. And they'll have that little bellboy going around shouting, "Last call for Philip Morris." $1,200 Raleigh coupons, and you get a free lung operation. You see where Lady Bird's going to make another tour of poverty-depressed areas in Alabama to collect the rent? In Canada, our largest-selling periodical happens to be Mad Magazine. Down here, you call it Time. I see where they were suggesting that the U.S. build the next embassy in Vietnam in a bus. Because this way they could drive around and meet the various South Vietnamese governments. Of course, I don't know that the South Vietnamese are so keen in sitting in the back. But right now, my brother is over in Vietnam, and he was telling me that no matter how much training they get over here before the Marines go into battle over there, they always get the briefing by the sergeant. Min, this is Sergeant Turner. I guess you all wondering what you're doing here in South Vietnam. Besides losing? Well, I want you to know it's a whole lot better than being in Fort Ord, California, getting meningitis. If it costs the life of every last one of you, we is gonna win, because this is one time the North is gonna lose. Wouldn't you say, soldier? How come you gotta carry that 200-pound bag through this hot, steamy jungle up to the front? Soldier, not only is we carrying a war to the enemy, we's carrying the Vietnamese to the enemy. Soldier, what's your name? Abernathy? Abernathy, what you doing down there on your knees? Oh, that's quicksand. Well, stick around, Abernathy, ain't through talking yet. Now, I want to tell you a little bit about this here war. As you can see, this here is an integrated platoon. And while you're over here, we'd like you whites and blacks to take out your differences on them yellows. In case you're wondering what it's like fighting the Chinese, it's wonderful. 2 hours after you fight them, you're hungry to fight them again. course, we've been losing a lot of our men because they was listening to some West Point lieutenant who was going around quoting what Teddy Roosevelt said about don't shoot until you see the whites of their eyes. They don't open their eyes a whole lot. We don't want no fraternizing with them civilians. Special, be very leery if any of them Buddhists would come up to you and say, hey, buddy, you got a light. Abernathy, you going AWOL. It's our job as United States Marines to be here and defend democracy no matter where it's failing. I promise you, we clear this Asian continent of all them commies, we'll go to Glendale and get them Nazis. We get all your TV up in Canada. A lot of people ask me, you know, they say, gee whiz, what impressions do foreigners get of Americans who see our television? You know, what truths do you learn about us? Well, you don't brush your teeth very often. You perspire a lot. It seems as though the only girl who has a secret is Katie Winters. But she has hairy legs. The only thing that holds your marriages together is anison. Ordinarily, though, no matter what they advertise down here, it's always got to be somehow related to sex. Everything they advertise. For example, in the face soap commercials, they never show you an American girl just washing her face, or even her hands. They always put her in the shower, and she's always sudsing all over and smiling and laughing. According to American television, her husband doesn't make her as happy as that bar of soap. At her when he gets home. If she hadn't spent all day playing in the shower. She'd have had time to get Billy's bicycle out of the driveway. And this holds true in other areas of advertising. You see down here in Beach Boulevard, billboard advertising. Here's a big billboard, and lying on the bottom of the billboard on her back is this gorgeous 20-foot sexy Scandinavian blonde. And just above the hip area is this huge cigar. And the copy says, the bold new size. Eric is here. Boy, if that's Eric, I'd sure like to see the rest of him. I'm not a comic, I'm an educator. These are facts. You look at that Playtex commercial. That's the most dishonest commercial I've ever seen. They show you this girl, and after they stuff her into a Playtex, the announcer says, it's a tight fit, isn't it, miss? That's right, she can testify how dishonest it is, because the announcer comes on and he says, ladies, this girl has lost 5 pounds. Now, you know it's been displaced. Because if you look closely, you'll see she has thick ankles. And she wears suppos to keep them from falling apart. Why, don't you get a kick out of American Girl today? She goes out on a date, and she put on the wig and the makeup and the eyelashes, the padded undergarments, the suppos, the shoes with the art supports. Then she tells you she's looking for a real man. Got all that junk on, she'd probably find him in a mirror. Well, my girl keeps losing her brassieres. Throws them on the dresser, they bounce out the window. I know a guy, wears a toupee. The other day he took a girl home, And they were going through Mulholland Drive in Los Angeles, which is Lover's Lane area up there, and they were in this tempest. I mean, the tempest took place in the car. And pretty soon there was junk all over the front seat. And she ended up holding his hair in her hand, and he ended up holding her loving cup. So anyway, he started waving it in front of her, and he said, "Listen, you are never going to get a husband or a guy wearing this stuff because you cheat them. You're misleading them." So then she held up his hair. She said, "Well, any guy who wears a toupee, he cheats too." So he said, "Well, that may be true, but at least when a guy takes his toupee off, his head is still there." Before coming down here this evening, I was out at the United Jewish Welfare Fund at the Beverly Hills Hotel. And the reason I qualify is my mother's family is Jewish, and my father's is Scotch. As a youngster, my dad said he could mix anything with Scotch. But this had caused me a lot of difficulty when I was growing up. I mean, aside from having to eat oatmeal bagels all the time. When my mother took me to synagogue, I was the only boy with a plaid skull cap. Until you've heard me play Hop and the Giel on the bagpipes. And my family at Toast was Hoot Man the Shevitz. I should tell you what happened there this evening. They have their names on IBM cards, showing the name and the address and the phone number and the amount of money that they gave the year before. And what happens after the speeches are made, the host will pick up one of the cards and he'll say, "Leonard Tannenbaum." And Leonard will stand up and say, "Leonard, last year you gave $40. How much do you give this year?" So with everybody looking at him, he feels forced to repeat the pledge. And what happened is he called about 13 names. And each guy who got up only gave what he'd given the year before. So the host got kind of upset, and he put the cards down, and he said, "Gentlemen, I want to talk to you very seriously for a moment. As you know, the Egyptians have received $3.5 billion in aid from the Soviet Union with which to build the Aswan Dam. Now, this means when that dam is completed, NASA is going to have power with which to operate nuclear reactors now being designed by Nazi scientists. This means that someday he's going to have the bomb, which means that someday the conflict in this world between the Arab and the Jew is inevitable. Now, we have the heart to fight, and we have the will to fight, but we need the material, which costs money. So let's increase last year's pledges." So he picked up the last card and he said, "Isidore Feinberg." Isidore stood up. He said, "Isidore, last year you gave $500. How much do you give this year?" And in a fit of emotion, Isidore Feinberg says, "I give $1 million. And with that, everybody in the room stood up and they applauded and they cheered. And then when Isidore sat down, he says, "And I'll pay it off, $500 a year." While I was in San Francisco, I came to the conclusion that it's a good thing that Los Angeles exists. Otherwise, you know, those people up there wouldn't have anything to talk about because they think that there's so much further ahead in every area compared to the city of L.A. But I want you to know, since coming down here this third time, I found one important area where the city of Los Angeles is way ahead of them. For example, in downtown San Francisco, around the Union Square area, you can see a lot of religious fanatics walking around the streets wearing signs, you know, that say, "The Savior is coming." Well, the other day, up at Pershing Square, I saw a guy walking around with a sign that says, "I'm here." It was Jordy. San Francisco is a very interesting community. San Francisco is about 40% Catholic and 60% homosexual. And the Catholics aren't reproducing as fast. Which is a paradox, because homosexuals practice birth control. I don't know how familiar you are with San Francisco, but they're starting an amateur night at Finocchio's. I I should tell you something, though. In coming down to the United States, I really had to get used to how bold and frank Americans were in their conversation. Well, in public print in Canada, we never refer to them as homosexuals. We call them Mounties. That's because they always get their man. Do you know, of all the stars coming out of Hollywood today, the one who is probably going to last the longest is this Tony Perkins fellow. Because he appeals to that basic female instinct, pity. He is so anemic, the draft board lists his blood type as H2O. Now, when he puffs up his chest, have you ever noticed how he's built like Audrey Hepburn? Would you believe this? In over 5 movies, Hollywood's had Tony Perkins making love to Sophia Loren. That's like trying to flood the Sahara with spit. I should tell you that this absence of real guys in the city of Los Angeles and San Francisco has made the girls very, very neurotic. Now, I took a girl home the other night. I had no ill intentions. I just took her to the door, gave her one little kiss goodnight. Right away, she puts up a defense mechanism, a gun. Boy, when I saw that thing, I thought I was finished. But she said I wasn't. My travels around the world, I've only found one truly liberal community where they don't seem to care who goes with their sister, Tijuana. You know, in California, if you want to have a wild weekend, you cross over the border into Tijuana, Mexico. Canadians go to Detroit. But America is the land of opportunity. I mean, American boy can grow up and become a president, but how many Canadian boys grow up and become a queen? More than you know. Thank you very much, folks. Good night.